Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, July 3rd. Coming up today, we'll hear from a resident of Sitting Bourne about just how bad the traffic can be after a busload of school children was stuck for hours. And with the general election tomorrow, we'll hear from a local business owner about what he's hoping for from the next government. But first, taking a look at our most read story on the website today, four restaurants in Kent that are all owned by the same company are going to close. Our business editor, Chris Britcher, joins me now. Chris, clearly everyone's very interested in this story. Firstly, can you tell us which restaurants they are and when they're closing?
Hi there. Yes, absolutely. So the restaurants which we know are closing this week are the Brewer's Fair Eateries in Margate, Westmalling and Bexley Heath and the Longreach Beef Eater in Whitstable. Listeners familiar with any of these sites will be aware they all back onto Premier Inn hotels. And that's the key element of this move because many of these sites will see more hotel rooms created in the former restaurant buildings. The restaurants seem likely to be scaled down and, crucially, will only be accessible to those staying at the hotel. So if you opt for one of the Premier Inn breakfasts, you'll still be able to get in, but you'll be eating it in a non-branded restaurant. In other words, they'll just become part of the Premier Inn complex at each site. One we do know that is closing down and is currently on the market is the Beef Eater in Raynham.
Now, these are all owned by Whitbread. What's behind the decision and what happened to staff?
That's right. Whitbread runs around 850 hotels in the UK and, of course, owns the Premier Inn brand. Back in April, it announced a reorganisation of its portfolio as part of a three-year cost-cutting drive. The company actually announced a pre-tax profit of £452 million earlier this year, which is up 21%. Which may come as some surprise given what they're doing now. But its branded restaurants, which will be familiar to Premier Inn customers, lagged some way behind. In fact, it says the 112 restaurants it plans to turn into more hotel rooms made a loss of £19 million in that year, while the 126 restaurants now being sold made a loss of £9 million. Clearly, it sees the potential of converting space not performing commercially into more accommodation, while still retaining facilities for Premier Inn customers to eat. There is a price to pay for staff, however, and that's going to be the axe falling on some 1,500 jobs nationwide. Those continuing to operate, like a number in Kent, will probably survive the worst of the cuts, but expect some roles to be made redundant.
And has the company said anything about this week's closures?
It has thanked the staff and communities it served and said the decisions it has taken were tough to make, but insisted it was a necessary move for the company.
Finally, Chris, what about other venues they own in the county?
A big question mark currently hangs over the Table restaurant in Broomfield in Herne Bay and the Woodlands Beef Eater in Gravesend. Both are currently not taking forward bookings, but no official announcement has been made by Whitbread as to what the plans for the sites are.
Thanks, Chris. Now, another of our most read stories today. There have been reports of school children being forced to wait on buses for hours after road closures and accidents brought traffic in Sitting Bourne to a standstill. Parents say students returning to Laysdown from Westlands arrived home just before 8 p.m. on Monday, despite being picked up at 4:30. A crash on the A249 coincided with Network Rail closing the Kings Ferry Bridge. I've been speaking to My Kent Family editor Lauren Abbott, who lives in Sitting Bourne. She says they've had to be very patient with all of the roadworks up until now, but it's getting beyond a joke.
Since Monday afternoon, I think we all set off for home or to pick the kids up from school at sort of 4:30 on Monday and just hit walls of traffic in every direction. And then messages on the local residents group started coming in saying, you know, what's with the traffic? Why is it so bad? And it sounds like the closure of the Kingsbury Bridge seems to be the root cause.
And I was reading a report as well last week that when you say traffic is bad, it's not just that traffic is slow. It has come to a standstill, like pretty much parked on the local roads.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have already maybe moaned about traffic in Sitting Bourne before, because obviously we've been subject to the 249 flyover project for a long time, which has made traffic really quite difficult in the area. But we are at a point now where you can drive out at sort of 4:30, and it would be no exaggeration to say you might move one road in an hour. It just isn't, nothing's moving, none of the main roads are moving, but also every tiny little cut through that people would ordinarily maybe revert to try and get to where they need to be, they are snarled with cars in every direction. It genuinely has been really difficult.
We're also hearing stories of kids getting caught up in this, school kids getting hot to and from school. But there was that story last week of, I think, children were picked up at 4:30 in the afternoon and then they didn't get home until nearly 8 o'clock at night. And I mean, this is a terrible time for it to be happening. We're in exam time now. We've got proms as well. How's it affecting the schools?
I think it's been really difficult. We've heard stories of some of the children this side of town being picked up on their school bus at sort of 10 to 4 and they're coming back in the door at 7:30. I mean, keeping children on a bus that long, that must be a nightmare for all concerned. We heard that there was a school trip that they just scraped back in time because obviously most of the children getting on the school buses are secondary pupils. But then if you've got kids out on a school trip because it's the end of term, they're likely to be 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And if they're coming back at that point, it's a real issue. And yes, I think a couple of the secondary schools have had their proms Monday and Tuesday evening. And there's been huge amounts of panic amongst parents trying to get them to venues that might be outside of Sitting Bull, maybe towards Medway. And the kids have all been late. They've not been coming to proms that are starting at sort of 6, 7 o'clock until 8, 8:30. And these are parents that have spent money on dresses, cars, you know, a real big deal. And their evenings are getting cut in half because they're just sat in the traffic.
The other area where I think it's expected to have an impact is voting tomorrow. Obviously, there's going to be a huge number of people out on the roads if they're not able to walk to their local polling station. Do you think this is going to put people off going out to vote?
Yeah, I mean, the understanding is that from what we've read from local councillors and people involved in Sitting Bull, that they've basically said there's nothing that they can do about this. They can't open the slip roads that are closed because that would pose a risk to road users because those bits of road aren't finished. And the Kingsbury Bridge is going to be shut until the works are done. So my understanding is we're stuck with this until the weekend potentially, and then it will start again when they do it again. But I think people are changing their plans already. We've heard you know, kids who've got swimming lessons and clubs after school, parents aren't bothering with taking them out. People are adjusting their working hours to not have to go out. And yes, I would think if you can't walk to a polling station and your polling station is a drive away, mine's on the cusp, but I probably could walk there with a bit of effort. I think you're not going to bother. There's no way, I think, that people, unless they're massively enthusiastic about the election, are going to want to sit in their car for 40, 45 minutes to go up a couple of roads just to cast their vote. I think it's a shame, but I think it is a real concern.
Local bosses say they are aware of the traffic impacts and are doing their best to minimise disruption, particularly for pupils who need to get to and from exams.
Kent Online News.
A 19-year-old woman's been charged with murder following a stabbing near Maidstone. Police were called to Southfields Way in Harrietshire in the early hours of yesterday after a 25-year-old man was reportedly attacked outside a house. He later died in hospital. Paige Poulton from Southie Road in Haringey is due in court later. Police say another man who was also arrested has now been released without charge. Two men have gone on trial accused of stabbing a waiter on his way home from work in Whitstable. Mandasha Hussain was attacked in an alleyway near the town's railway station in December last year. The 32 and 25-year-olds from Margate and Ramsgate deny wounding charges and the case continues. A man's appeared in court accused of a sex attack on a schoolgirl in Folkestone. The suspect allegedly made inappropriate comments to a child before touching them in the Ford Road area last week. A 20-year-old from the town is due back before a magistrate in August. Six people have been arrested following a major investigation into modern-day slavery offences in Kent, Surrey, Manchester and London. Suspected brothels in Gravesend and Maidstone were raided and a 45-year-old man was detained. Police also seized drugs, more than 90 mobile phones and documentation. Head to Kent Online to see footage of a man who stole £120 worth of fuel from a petrol station near Hythe. He was caught on CCTV filling up at Pall Marsh Golf Service Station last month and driving off without paying. The owner says it happens regularly and is really damaging for their business. Police have seized six air rifles and a number of cannabis plants from a home in Ashford. Officers were called to Tadworth Road in Kennington following reports of a disturbance last Wednesday. A 34-year-old man was arrested. He's been released on bail while inquiries continue. A 27-year-old suspect is due in court after property was stolen from a number of cars and vans in West Kent. He was arrested after police reviewed CCTV following the thefts in Snodland, Leybourne, Waldham, Halling and Aylesford. Bank cards, cash, tobacco and a watch were allegedly taken.
Kent Online News.
It's thought a teenager missing from Tunbridge Wells may have travelled to Tunbridge or Paddock Wood. 15-year-old Courtney Clark was last seen in High Brooms yesterday lunchtime. Police are concerned for her welfare. We shared her picture on socials. There's a warning about jumping into the sea from piers in Kent after a teenager was left brain damaged. damaged. 15-year-old Jack Dolan was flown to hospital after leaping from Stone Pier in Margate last month, but a scans revealed no brain activity. Guy Addington is from the RNLI, which has lifeguards on beaches across the county.
It's important that people take the time to understand just some of the risks and some of the hazards associated with the coastal environment. And it's worth going online and checking the times of the tide. Now, that information is readily available online, but you need to know a little bit about what you're looking at. Does your planned walk have any areas of tidal cutoff hazard, for example? Or are you planning a trip to the beach and taking an inflatable toy? If you put an inflatable toy in the water in an offshore wind, that's a wind moving from the land out to sea, it's going to get carried away really, really quickly, far faster than anyone can swim. So our advice is check the weather, check the tides, but most importantly, find yourself a lifeguarded beach. Around the coast of the UK and Ireland, RNLI lifeguards patrol some 250 or so beaches. So there should be a lifeguarded beach somewhere near to you. So find yourself a lifeguarded beach. And when there, take their advice and swim between the red and yellow flags. And that's the area that they will focus the most of their attention on. It's the area that they've deemed most suitable for bathing. So swim between the red and yellow flags at a lifeguarded beach for a safe trip to the seaside.
I know we saw the really sad story that came out last week of the 15-year-old boy who was injured. He was jumping off the pier in Margate. He was with a group of friends at the time. Would you have any specific message for teenagers or young people who are taking the opportunity to go out maybe for the first time without their parents, heading to the coast? What message would you give to young people?
Of course, I think some of the detail of that incident is still to be discovered, so can't comment too much on the specifics of that. Our advice to anybody heading out to the coast is to just take that time to understand as much as they can about some of the risks associated with the coastal environment. What sort of impact is the tide and the depth of water going to have on your plans? Our advice is to go to a lifeguarded beach and bathe between the red and yellow flags. That's the area deemed most suitable for bathing by the highly trained lifeguards that operate in that area. So go to a lifeguarded beach, swim between the flags, and don't be tempted to go into a body of water that hasn't been specifically designated as suitable and safe for bathing. So go to a lifeguarded beach, swim between the flags for a safe day out. Don't be tempted to bathe in areas that haven't been specifically designated as suitable.
And if somebody does get into trouble, what should they do? How do they contact help?
It's a great question. If you get into difficulty yourself or you see somebody in difficulty at the coast, don't hesitate to call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard. That's 999 and ask for the Coast Guard. And if you find yourself in difficulty in the water, particularly unexpectedly, so a slip, a trip, a fall or a jump, or you've fallen off a craft or something, remember our float to live message. And that message is, if you find yourself entering cold water, sort of fight that natural instinct to thrash around and swim hard as panic and the cold water shock response set in, and instead try to relax, try to push the head back into the water, ears submerged, and that promotes a face up, chest up position to float in the water. The cold shock response and panic response will pass in a very short space of time, and that's buying you time just to plan your next move, which might be to shout for help or it might be to swim for safety. So if you find yourself in difficulty, remember, float to live, on the back, head and ears submerged, face up, airway protected position, and wait for that cold shock response to pass.
More than £4,000 has been raised for Jack's family, who have decided to move him to end-of-life care. A Hythe nurse who sold methamphetamine to friends has avoided being sent to prison. David Popple said he was going through a dark time in his life when police found more than £3,000 of the drug in his camper van. The 63-year-old, who lives in Belmarsh Crescent, was given a two-year suspended sentence. He must also carry out 140 hours of unpaid work and attend rehab. A Gillingham man's been given a three-year football banning order after throwing a vape onto the pitch during a Millwall match. It happened as they played Birmingham in March. The 23-year-old was charged by police and pleaded guilty in court.
Kent Online News.
Police are investigating as parking signs have been repeatedly damaged at a nature reserve near Faversham. An angle grinder was used to cut down signs displaying details of charges at Orr Marshes three times in as many weeks. Kent Wildlife Trust say it's caused thousands of pounds worth of damage, and one person was scammed after trying to pay through a fraudulent website. Experts have warned a new McDonald's in Dover could spill over onto a former graveyard where there are still burials. There are proposals for a new restaurant next to the ruins of St James's Church. It's understood the site was officially closed in the 1800s, but there are still some graves beneath the ground. The organisation Historic Buildings and Places say the development would be inappropriate. McDonald's bosses say it will bring jobs and footfall to the area. The owner of a business in Deal, which has been granted permission to sell alcohol until 11pm, has shot down suggestions it will see people loitering outside. Darren Jenkins from the fishmongers and street food bar Jenkins and Sons has moved into a new premises on the high street, but says he's not committed to becoming a drinking establishment. He says they just want to serve a few oysters and glasses of wine during the summer months.
Kent Online News.
The owner of an animal sanctuary has told Kent Online she can't believe someone cut the microchip out of a dog before dumping them. The lurcher was taken to a vet's in Ashford, where it needed surgery to repair the wound. He's now being cared for at Lord Whiskey Animal Sanctuary in Stelling Minas. It's run by Margaret Todd.
Well, this poor lurcher, like many stray dogs, was taken into a vet's by the member of the public. Looking at the dog, the vet discovered that it had a hole in its back where obviously a microchip had been placed, and somebody had very cruelly tried to take the chip out.
That sounds like an absolutely awful thing to happen. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, and I hope that we never see anything like that again. I can only think that whoever had the dog removed the chips because they didn't want to be recognised as the owner, or the dog had been stolen and somebody took the chip out because they wanted to adopt the dog, and then the dog got lost and a kind member of the public took it into the vets.
I mean, that must have been awful for the dog to go through. For anyone who's not aware as to where these microchips go, can you just explain where they are on a dog and how far under the skin they are?
They're not that deep, although the wound on this dog, you know, was fairly deep. But they normally are placed between the shoulders. Microchips are very useful. And also, if someone loses a dog, the dog can be traced back to the owner. But unfortunately, so many dogs that are microchipped, when they're passed on to a new owner, the chip isn't registered properly. And therefore, it's very difficult to find out who they belong to.
Yeah, and if one's been removed like that, I mean, that would have been incredibly painful for the animal, wouldn't it? It must have been in some distress, I would have thought.
It doesn't bear thinking about it. You know, you imagine having a knife or something put in your back, you know, and they obviously, when they put it in, they must have moved it around a bit to find the microchip to get it out. I think absolutely awful.
And how was the lurcher when he came into your care?
Strangely enough, he was very friendly, very pleased to see us, and very relaxed. He's just a lovely dog, very, very gentle dog, and just wants a really loving home.
Have you seen an increase in dogs being abandoned at the moment, Margaret? We've heard a lot about the cost of living and how it's affected animal sanctuaries with a lot more people abandoning pets. Has that affected you?
It certainly has. I think it's all the way, you know, across the board that there's just more neglect. I think a lot of the reasons for it is that so many people have been made homeless now, and also landlords won't allow pets, and sadly people have to give them up if they have to move into rented property, which is a great shame.
A young Kent athlete has been told she'll need reconstructive surgery after a devastating knee injury. 13-year-old Elsie Power from Raynham, who's on the England basketball pathway, ruptured her anterior cruciate ligament in May. Her family are now trying to raise money for private surgery. It could take around a year to recover. We're just a day away from the general election. Kent Online's been hearing from a local business owner about what he'd like from the new government. All of the major parties have made pledges to company owners in their manifestos, with many focusing on economic growth. The Conservatives announced a 10-point plan to help small businesses, while Labor is promising to reform the business rate system. Jason Rainbird is managing director of Flowbird, a CRM agency based in Ashford. He says whatever happens, there needs to be substantial change.
I did quite a lot of reading around, and I actually took a little bit of a test about what my political views were, and it was quite interesting to see what the results were. So I was looking at kind of not only the business aspect, but obviously the social aspect as well of, you know, the thing. So it's not just obviously business is part of life, but life is everything else. So I thought I was going down one track at the beginning of the thing, and I came out and it looks like I'm going down a slightly different track now, which was a bit of a shock to me. I was like, oh, okay, maybe my views have changed over the last couple of years. So yeah, my gut feel is I think we need something radical. I think we need radical changes. I think we've been down one route, we've been down another route, and we keep kind of bouncing between two things. I think we need an overhaul of the whole process and our overhaul of the whole system, because we keep trying the same thing and expecting a different result, and we keep getting the same result. And so I think that wasn't that the phrase that's the sign of insanity. So a radical change is what is required, definitely.
If you had a wish list coming out of the election, if you could wave a magic wand and have a wish list of things that would be implemented, what would be on it?
I think the honest thing, top of my list, is proportional representation. I think we're in a situation where a government can move into power, not have a majority, and yet still rule. And I think that's wrong. I think, there are the smaller parties out there that need a say, need a positioning thing. And I think that's an important part. I take, for example, the Green Party. My honest view is they're never going to get in power, but I definitely think they need to be represented in government. And I think that's an important thing. And I think there are other parties out there that have the same issues. And so I think we need to look at being fairly represented. I think that's it. And my magic wand would be, Brexit would be a thing of the past. So I think that was a mistake that we did that. I think we should, I don't know how that would work practically, and I don't think in terms it could work, but ideally I would like to move back into the European environment. I think we've moved away from what was our biggest partner, thinking that we can control it ourselves, and I think that's a mistake. I think since Brexit's happened, I think we've proven categorically that that is a problem now. And I think it's going to get worse, if I'm honest with you.
Do you think that
would definitely be a magic wand for me.
Do you think that's an issue that's being addressed enough in the general election? I read some criticism, I think it was last week, that Brexit's sort of the elephant in the room that nobody's really daring to go too near it. Do you think that it needs to be more of a topic of conversation?
I do. I think that Brexit needs to be reviewed. I think that, we threw our toys out the pram because we wanted to. And I think now we've got to go back and say, look, eat a little bit of humble pie and say, OK, I think it was a mistake. What do we want to do? I think the big problem is that a lot of the other European partners we're going to punish the UK for wanting to come back. I honestly don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it benefits everybody. So I think if we turned up and said, look, hands up. We took a referendum, we went for the referendum, but as in hindsight, it didn't work. Can we come back, sort of thing? We would just come to the terms and conditions. It's much easier for us to work to come back in than it was to work to leave. I don't know how practical it is in reality. I don't know all the finer details, but I think, yeah, it is something that needs to be addressed. I think we have shot ourselves in the foot over that problem.
And a TOWIE star and ex-EastEnders actor will be taking part in a charity football match in Kent today. Dan Osborne and Jake Wood are just two of the names lining up at Tunbridge Angels Football Club to raise money for the Motor Neuron Disease Association. They'll join celebs from Love Island and MAFS. Kickoff is at 7:30.
Kent Online Sports.
Cricket now, and Kent have a chance of salvaging a draw on the final day of their county championship match against Hampshire. They were forced to follow on at Southampton yesterday and are due to resume on 132 for 2, trailing by 30 runs. It comes as Kent's Jaden Denley has been named in England's under-19 squad for a two-game test series against Sri Lanka. The 18-year-old, who's the nephew of Kent teammate Joe Denley, will play alongside the sons of Andrew Flintoff and Michael Vaughan. The first game starts on Monday. And a Kent woman's been chosen to represent Team GB in the judo at this summer's Olympics in Paris. Katie Jemima Yates-Brown from Pembury will compete in the under-70 kilos category. She's previously won 2 bronze medals at the Commonwealth Games. Sticking with the Olympics, and Kent Paralympian Will Bailey has helped unveil a new 50p coin celebrating Team GB and Paralympics GB athletes. The table tennis player and former Strictly contestant from Tunbridge Wells was part of a ceremony at the Royal Mint. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.